What is up, everybody? Welcome back to The Hangar. Thank you for tuning in. A little bit of a different episode this week. We are trying out a little bit of a new format that we want to sprinkle in future seasons and episodes. We're trying to be a little bit more portable, which will allow us to kind of expand the guests that we can have. So we have acquired a new mic that allows us to do that. So you're going to hear a little bit of a difference in how the audio feels. But still great content. Still sounds good, honestly, I think. But we have Mauricio this week interviewing fellow Hangarman and great fan, friend of the podcast, Justin Atkinson. Justin is an awesome dude with kind of a crazy but awesome story. And he goes into it a little bit and kind of expounds upon this phrase that we've been throwing around from Godless, long enough to forget who you are. He and Mauricio unpack that a little bit. And man, is it good. So you guys give it a listen. Also, a fair warning, this was recorded on a firing range that some of the Hangarmen had gone out to throw a few rounds down the range. So you might hear some gunshots. Don't freak out. If a 9mm is going off in your right ear, it's all right. Don't panic. Nothing is happening. Well, I won't say that because, you know, maybe it is, but it will purely be a coincidence that the episode you're listening to right now also has gunfire. So stay low. Yep. All right. Here's Mauricio and Justin.
Right, so you're Justin Atkinson. What's up, Justin?
What's up, man?
Just real quick, so I mean, we're good friends, and so I know you, you know me. Just trying to figure out, let the people who don't know you just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So originally from South Louisiana, Lake Charles area. I ended up in Mississippi for college, and 9/11 happened. My freshman year, I was already kind of interested in the military, wanted to do something in the special operations community, and was fortunate enough to have that opportunity. Shortly after I graduated from Millsaps College here in Jackson, joined 20th Special Forces Group, 2006, I guess it was, and I've been active duty with 20th Special Forces ever since for the last 13 years. Did some time as an infantryman, and then an enlisted Green Beret, and then I went back about six years ago now, and took my commission and worked my way back up. Now I'm a detachment commander for a Special Forces military free fall team.
Free fall, so like parachuting.
Yeah, so each Special Forces company has six teams. And a handful of those teams will have some type of specialty infiltration method. And our team just so happens to be military free fall or skydiving. I mean, pretty much the same thing. That's just how we get to work. Once we're at work, everything else is the same as all of our other special forces teams. So it's been a fortunate, I've been very fortunate in my career to have some opportunities to do some pretty cool things.
Yeah, so you said you're a Green Beret.
Yep.
So explain, what is a Green Beret? What does a Green Beret do?
So, you know, the SEALs, Rangers, all these other units, honestly, in today's culture, are probably a little bit more widely known. Same skill sets as those guys. We just do a lot of other things in addition to that, where, you know, SEAL team's a scalpel. A Special Forces team is a Swiss Army knife with a scalpel attached also. So we have different specialty teams, scuba teams, military free fall, and all of those types of things. But once we actually are forward deployed, we're a force multiplier. So you'll have 12 Green Berets that train a couple of thousand Afghans or Iraqis or, you know, whatever country it happens to be, versus having to send a couple of thousand Americans. You can send 12 Green Berets and have the same effects. So
you're in there training militaries from other countries, or
yeah, law enforcement, militaries, that type of thing. So
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really great job. Definitely gratifying. A lot of hard work. It's a difficult community to get into, and for some folks, difficult to stay in. It's definitely hard on families and that type of thing. When I got in 2006, I think the divorce rate was like 90%. Wow. And I've experienced that as well. But definitely gratifying. All of the other special operations units, certainly very cool. Great Americans and all those types of things, but just a wide array of mission sets within special forces. You know, one day wearing a suit, the next day knee deep crossing a creek in a jungle somewhere, just day to day. There's such a wide spectrum of operations that we do. It never gets boring, that's for sure.
So what are you allowed to, or whatever, can you tell me the kind of training that has to go into it? Like, what was the process of becoming a Green Beret? The difficulty, some kind of, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, in the last decade or so, there's been a slew of TV shows, like, I guess, Discovery Channel or National Geographic, whatever. In fact, I think the Surviving the Cut series, where they follow Marine Corps Scout Sniper, Army Special Forces, maybe the Air Force was in there, whatever. They actually came through a class behind me when I was first trying out in 2006. At the time, it hasn't changed that much. You had to be, of course, at the time, male. That's now been opened up to females as well. But it was a 24-day selection process. You already had to be in the military, obviously, to try out. But you would go to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and just spend 24 days in hell. Land navigation was a big part of that, being able to navigate mostly in the dark. The woods of North Carolina, you know, just given a grid coordinate and everything you own on your back. Being able to navigate social situations as well. You know, land navigation, physically navigating is kind of the first gate when you first try out. But then very quickly navigating social situations, both with your peers and with role players. A lot of running, a lot of carrying a rucksack. And, of course, the ever-popular team events where you're paired with a group of guys and given an impossible task. And someone silently in the shadows grading you on how you manage stress and whether you can lead when in a leadership position or follow and support whoever is in a leadership position. So I think we started my selection class with just under 450 soldiers. By the end of it, I think the number was 127 that were left that actually got selected. Of that 127, roughly 20 months later, 19 of us graduated together. And as of me taking my commission in, 2010, I went back to the Q course again, the Special Forces Qualification course as an officer in 2013. Of the 19 of us that graduated together, 9 of them had been killed overseas in combat. So it was an exciting and difficult time to join Special Operations and get to be around a lot of really great Americans, good guys.
So you said there was a 24-day selection course.
Yeah.
And then you had 20 months of training after that?
Absolutely. So it was 24 days for Special Forces assessment and selection. And then if you passed that, that just got you in the door to start the Special Forces qualification course, which ranged from 10 weeks of small unit tactics, very similar to the Army Ranger School, which is also something that's easy to research. And then specific job training. At the time, I was a Special Forces engineer, so studied construction and plumbing, electrical work, all those types of things, and then a lot of training with explosives and that type of thing. And then it all of course, language training. All Green Berets are required to be able to speak and read and hear foreign languages, at least one, to a certain standard to be able to graduate. And then Robin Sage was also something pretty easy to research. Robin Sage is a roughly month-long final exam where all Green Berets have to prove that they've mastered all of these different skills and can actually apply them in complex skill sets. It's a pretty exciting and interesting lineage just with respect to that kind of final examination for Green Berets. It's kind of a, gosh, in previous podcasts, you guys have talked about like coming of age, those types of things. That's really where the rubber meets the road on whether a guy's cut out to be in Special Forces or not. And, you know, unfortunately, there are guys that spend 2 years there and get to the final exam and still don't pass. Mm. So
it's pretty difficult to do. It takes a lot of mental and physical strength.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And emotional, you know, being able to navigate those social situations you're put in, the replicated dilemmas that small teams face in third world countries when, I mean, it's just you and 11 of your buddies with a little bit of funding and a whole lot of hope to try to solve the problems put in front of you. So honestly, I'd say more than anything, a Green Beret is a problem solver.
So by the time you're finished with this 20-month course, qualification course, there's a, you know, there's a month-long test at the end, and then at the end, you become a Green Beret.
Right.
And that's like that almost initiation, that moment. What was that moment like for you?
Oh, man. Well, so I've done it twice, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit of a unicorn in that respect. I mean, there's a lot of other guys who have done it, but most guys don't want to put up with that, you know, 2 years of stress multiple times. Yeah, that moment was pretty special. For me, it was August of 2008. My grandfather was still alive at the time. And especially on my mom's side, a lot of military service throughout multiple generations. And in fact, I've got a picture at my graduation. And at that point, I'd probably lost 30 pounds. And so I'm looking kind of skinny. And but on either side of me are my grandfather, who served in World War II in the Pacific, my stepdad, who was on a ship out of Norfolk, Virginia, in Vietnam, and my uncle, who was in the Air Force in Vietnam as well. So pretty exciting day. And my dad and stepmom were there as well. The whole family was there. So
when you go, you start the course, you start this whole selection process, you make the decision you're going to try out to be a Green Beret.
Sure.
And you go through this time at the end, and that special day that, you know, you'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference? Who is Justin before that and then Justin after that moment?
So, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because you would expect that, you know, the validation, the experience of, you know, now getting to wear a different colored hat and, you know, all of that, it changes who you are. And there is some degree of that. There's some degree of that. But honestly, so a friend of mine, Special Forces guy who was killed on my trip to Afghanistan in 2009, had a lot of respect for him. He was one of those guys that, you know, everybody just wanted to be like. Over a campfire one night, we'd been hunting here in Mississippi with a young kid who didn't get to kill his first deer and was kind of bummed out. And it was awesome that this warrior could make this connection with a young kid and cheer him up and everything. And I say that to say, following that, the kid's dad mentioned that. It's like, man, I appreciate you cheering up my son. I wouldn't expect that from, you know, a guy with all these different badges and qualifications in the military and deployments and all this kind of stuff. And he just kind of laughed it off and he said, you know, the becoming a Green Beret or the Special Forces course guys that are supposed to be here, that's already who they were. That course is just about weeding out the people that aren't. That's who I've always been, it's who I'm always going to be. And I've always carried that with me, you know. Now, 13 years later, it's certainly dominated my life, affected personal relationships, where I live, who I'm able to hang out with, those types of things. And so there is some element of that, especially being gone a lot, coming home. It's not always easy to assimilate with, you know, other people that have lived in the same town their whole lives and that kind of thing. And so it does kind of become your identity, you know. Right.
It kind of just tests your character, tests your willingness,
sure.
The drive. All right, so I'm going to drop a statement on you.
Yeah.
And this is just kind of something that we pulled out of the movie Godless, or the short, the series Godless on Absolutely. Netflix. And, you know.
Great show, by the way.
Yeah, it was awesome. He, the Roy said to Truckee, you know, how long have you been with these women? You know, long enough to forget who you are. So I want to take that statement that long enough to forget who you are. Like, right. What does that do to you? What does that say to you? As soon as I say it, go.
Oh, man. Long enough to forget who you are. Gosh, it hits on so many different levels. You know, when I was leaving college, I was actually kind of torn between whether I should go to the mission field or join the military. And with Special Forces specifically, I felt like I could do both. Now, 13 years later, I certainly haven't lived that with that intent. And there are definitely times throughout my career that I forgot where I came from. I got caught up in, you know, the whether it was in combat, the emotions and chaos of what was going on. Or especially now as an officer, just the stress of the administrative side of things, kind of even remembering why I joined in the first place. And that's definitely extended to my personal life as well, you know. That's something that actually during our training they talk about quite a bit in our survival school. It also focuses on, you know, if you become a prisoner of war and those types of things. And the guy that started it, Colonel Nick Rowe, had been a great book, 5 Years to Freedom. He was a Special Forces officer in Vietnam, was captured, was a POW for 5 years. And so that's kind of always been my framework to think back on of, you know, what's the worst case scenario? How long can a man live that every day? The worst case scenario while the rest of the world, the rest of your inner circle, the rest of you, I mean, this guy, it was married. And came back 5 years later without any contact whatsoever with his wife. And she actually still lives in Fayetteville, North Carolina, waited for him the whole time. It's an awesome story, but, you know, that's not always the case. So that's always kind of set the tone for me, or at least since I learned about Colonel Rowe and his experience of that put that framework together in my mind of what does the worst case scenario look like and how long can a man live in that before he starts to assimilate with whatever conflict he's facing or adversity or sickness or you know, poverty, whatever it is. And so many examples of intense adversity I've had an opportunity to see, especially overseas, that people are just living in every day, sometimes without the knowledge or relationship with Christ, and yet they continue to just thrive and hope and work and all those things. So that's definitely an aspect of the sometimes seeing or being able to appreciate people's priorities, especially in the United States, where you would think everybody would just be on Easy Street and be happy with everything they have, and it's not always the case. You know, it's a lot more depth to a man than just, you know, are all my physical needs met.
Right.
And so, man, that, you know, there's so many aspects of my own life that I can see where I either continued to do things not in line with God's intent for my life, or, you know, maybe it was some outward force that was affecting my life that went on for a long period of time. And you do, you start to forget what life was like before that, who we are and whose we are in the face of adversity. It chips away at you, and before you realize it, you know, you're a new person carrying this burden or this scarlet letter or whatever it is that now creates a new identity for you that you never should have shouldered in the first place.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you said that it changes in adversity. That's kind of what you're saying as well, yeah. Hearing you say. And so that's one of the things that kind of hit me when thinking about that statement. You know, how, you know, long enough to forget who you are. You know, how long have you been in adversity before you forget who you were before that hit?
Right.
And you know, for me as a Christian, and when adversity hits me, it feels like it doesn't really take a whole lot of time. In that adversity, you get smacked in the face. What was it, Mike Tyson said, everybody goes in with a plan until you get punched in the face?
Right, right. You know?
And so sometimes that's what it feels like. You know, you're trucking along in this Christian life, in a life, you know, trying to pursue a relationship with Jesus. And then it all hits the fan. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, you forget, I'm God's son. And then all of a sudden you start, you know, falling into all of the other vices, whatever it is, you run to the things that you don't want to run to, but it seems like it's because you've forgotten who you were before, who God says you are, who you believe to be, you are to be, based off what God says. So have you, like, experienced any of that in your life?
Absolutely. And, you know, also a unique situation of being around so many other Special Forces guys and overall the Special Operations community, in so much as that culture is made up of people who routinely, of their own accord, push themselves past their comfort zone. So it's given me an opportunity to see a lot of people that started out on a path and either self-inflicted or externally sourced, faced a lot of adversity, and myself included. And it's a two-edged sword. Adversity, protracted over a long period of time, can make you forget who you are. But extreme adversity also seems to be the catalyst to drive us back to remember who we are. And ultimately, I think that's a decision. But for me personally, it's I'm pretty hard-headed, you know. And unfortunately, I've chosen to learn a lot of those lessons the hard way. And, you know, unfortunately the last year or so I've spent in vertical. I've also had a lot of opportunities outside a culture, outside a career that became my identity, to realize who I was before I ever started that journey. And realize that while, you know, I've been very blessed, as far as my military career, got to do some cool things and be around some amazing people and have some really awesome experiences. Still at the end of the day, that's not who I am, you know. And I'm a Christian, I belong to Jesus Christ, and I'm here for his purpose and his mission. And just so happened that also took me into the military and down the paths I've been down. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it has been a relief, even as much as I like my career, to remember that that's not who I am. That's not, you know, the total man. That's not who Christ called me to be. A part of what I feel very strongly, and before I joined, and even still now, felt called to do. But it, you know, there's so many other things that I'm called to do outside of my career that can't be who I am completely.
You mentioned before that when you were going into this, you thought, well, man, I wanted to go into missions. I wasn't sure, torn between the two. Mm-hmm. And you felt like you were being, used the term led, that you were being led to use this opportunity in the military to do both.
Right.
And then you said over the time, you'd forgotten.
Sure.
That's why you went in there. When was it that you realized that you'd forgotten that?
Oh, man. Well, I'd like to say that it was just one time and that, you know, everything was on the straight and narrow after a particular moment, but that's not truly been the case. I'd have to say there was a moment in Afghanistan though in 2009 where there was, you know, it was a close call. Previously in that trip that we had lost, you know, 5 close friends that we went over with. And so it was a sobering time and a close call for me personally. Really for the sake of my family and just realizing the impact that a near miss, or, you know, if that situation had turned out differently, how it would have affected my family, really refocused me on what God had for me to do and who he was calling me to be. Now, I haven't executed that plan perfectly by any stretch, but I do feel that, you know, coming back and taking my commission, becoming an officer, coming back here to Mississippi, that those things are in line with the plan that he has for me. So I don't know if that answers.
Yeah. Question. And so, well, I know quite a bit of your story. You know, sure. we're real close and we talk a lot.
Yeah.
And this obviously isn't the place to call out your story, so I'm not doing that. But over the past, you know, year, couple of years, yeah, there's been some adversity in your life. And then there came a point where you started seeing things a little differently, a little clearly, more clearly, especially in the midst of the adversity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what is it, or what was it? Has it changed? Have you changed? Have you seen or been reunited with that person who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm about 14 months into some a very extremely adverse situation, right? Really at Christmas last year, I ended a relationship I was in a month prior or so, and unexpected for my family, I was at home at Christmas by myself, and it gave me an opportunity, instead of, you know, having a significant other there, and to just focus on my interaction with, you know, my blood relatives. And man, it was just a great Christmas. It was phenomenal to spend time all back in one place and kind of think back over our lives and different generations. I mean, it was one of those family events where we really dug in, and everybody was actually present. And you know, we talked about my grandfather, and he and I had such a close relationship, and everything that had transpired really in the last decade or so. And so that kind of set the tone for me coming back to here to Mississippi, kind of refocused on what it was that I wanted. And it was not, it was maybe 2 weeks before our small group of men that meet every Thursday night around a campfire and talk about, you know, what we want, what we're afraid of, what we're going to do about it, those types of things, and how, you know, how Jesus is working in our lives, man. You know, something about that campfire just caught the whole group on fire. And we've seen some amazing, I mean, miracles happen in the community. People's lives changing, people with failing health, very serious medical conditions, you know, just renewed to health, relationships reconciled, new relationships springing up, centered around Christ. And it's just been taken off in the local community. And part of that, even within my own military unit, there's guys that are religiously showing up every week to hear about Christ and to be involved with other men that are like-minded and more importantly, have similar hearts for Jesus. And man, it has just been electrifying for the last 2 months. And so most recently, in facing all the adversity and really feeling like I was on the losing end of it, it's just been a complete turnaround since the first of this year. And very fortunate to have, you know, I've always had community within the special operations community, right? but that was not spiritually fulfilling. It was fulfilling in all the other senses. But to be able to be linked in and intimately synchronized with other Christian men is, the value of that is there's no way to put a number on it. It's been invaluable, and it's completely changed my outlook on what's going on in my life and how adversity is actually opportunities to grow and remember who you are and to, you know, have those steel nerves in the middle of combat or whatever the adversity is, to the point that the people around you look at you with zero understanding at how you can have peace beyond all understanding, how you can be, you know, in the middle of the fire and be cool as a cucumber and just know who you are and, more importantly, whose you are, and remember that. And, you know, getting back to Godless, you know, definitely a secular movie, shoot the name of the show, is literally Godless. But even they capture that human dynamic of we all want to have a purpose. Mm-hmm. We all want to have an identity in that purpose and then do something that matters, be a part of something that's bigger than us as individuals. And, you know, right now things are going great. It's I have that in my military career, but more importantly, I've got that in a Christian community of people that hold each other accountable, would do anything, day or night, for one another, and just living out Christ's love for one another every day. Man, it's just awesome to be a part of.
Well, and these past couple months haven't been void of adversity.
No, if anything, as all this started to take off, as the snowball started to roll and pick up momentum and things started happening, God started actually, you know, revealing his love and his power through our group, through the men in this area. Man, if anything, the adversity doubled or grew exponentially for some guys in the group. And I don't think that's a coincidence either.
All right, so just getting ready to wrap up. Sure. Just two questions. One is, do you answer this one first? Do you think, or what is different now through adversity and moving forward through future adversities than before? You said you had that community in your unit, in the Special Forces unit.
Yeah.
And you've got the community now outside of that and the spiritual community, if you will. What would you say is the difference between then and facing adversity and having admittedly forgotten who you were in some of those times, and then now through adversity and moving forward? What is the key there? What is the biggest difference between the two times?
Exponentially less weight on my shoulders. You know, I mean, we have a common saying that you know, nobody's coming to help. We got to figure this out. There is no one else. And I lived that in every facet of my life. I just, you know, assumed if, just like I got through Special Forces selection and qualification and deployments, that if I just worked harder, slept less, sweated more, and leaned into the rug straps a little harder, that, you know, I was going to skate by yet again on bone density and muscle mass. And, I mean, you know, just turned 36 last month, and I'm living proof of where that gets you. Whereas in the last few months, you know, just, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but let go and let God, but truly allowing yourself to be led, not just giving lip service to your relationship with Christ and the mandates for how we would live and how we should be joyful. We should be, you know, I mean, we're coming into the problems in our lives already victorious. So why would you then, you know, start to assume that whatever adversity you're facing, it can beat you? You can't. We're already victorious. We're just still here to share that victory with other people who aren't yet. And then two, Man, personally, so yes, one, personally, actually living out my relationship with Christ. But second to that, also actively pursuing, not making excuses to get around it, not being unwilling because it's uncomfortable to have that conversation about what's really going on in your life. Man, surrounding yourself with other Christian, like-minded men who can be accountable and not judgmental, who'll be honest, not judge you for, you know, when you're having difficulty or when you're, the adversity is getting to you, but rather to build you up and help you to put back on the armor of God and go back out and get back in the fight. Man, that one-on-one relationship with Christ is the difference. And then secondly, that community, that one-on, shoot, now we started with what, 4 or 5, yeah. We're up to 20-something just in our core group. And to see that community grow and how God's working in God's lives around you and to claim that victory, to constantly bring up the successes and when God showed up, when you felt like you had no hope left, and you sharing those stories and to build that community that's built of all of our individual stories, those two ingredients have just completely changed my outlook on adversity.
It's like having those guys around you. It's in those moments when you're about to forget who you are, they're there to remind you.
Yeah, right.
That's good stuff. All right, so last question. This is it's a quick question. This is, we like to ask this of all of the people, all of our guests that we're interviewing. And so if you could grab a hanger man by the face right now,
yeah,
who's facing adversity, and just tell him one thing, what would you tell him?
Oh, man. That's a hard one. But given only the opportunity to say one thing, man, I'd have to say, just take one more step. Just keep moving. Just keep moving forward. Be led. Lean on Christ and your other Christian brothers around you, and don't give up. Man, just keep moving forward. You know, it's the darkest before the dawn. It's coldest right before the sun comes up. Just when you turn to Christ, that's when Satan is going to hit you the hardest, where you're the weakest. And just don't give in. Don't give up, and continue to run towards Christ. Everything else will fall in place.
Well, man, just spent like 5 hours on the range together doing some training with some guys. Man, thank you for this opportunity to sit down and talk to you in front of the microphone for the hanger men who are listening. We got a couple guys literally waiting outside your front door here with 2 boxes of pizza so we can get some food.
Man, I'm ready.
So, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for hanging out with me, and thanks for being my friend and that guy who reminds me who I am when I'm in some adversity. And I just let you know I value you, man, and I love you.
Hey, brother, I appreciate it. Thanks.